You are listening to Man Behind the Machine.
Although the format was capable of offering higher quality video and audio than its consumer rivals, VHS and Betamax videotape, Laserdisc never managed to gain widespread use in North America, largely due to high costs for the players and video titles themselves, though due to lower manufacturing costs, Laserdiscs were less expensive to purchase than Beta or VHS cassettes, and the inability to record TV programs. 1. It eventually did gain some traction in that region and became somewhat popular in the 1990s. It was not a popular format in Europe and Australia. By contrast, the format was much more popular in Japan and in the more affluent regions of Southeast Asia, such as Hong Kong, Singapore and Malaysia, and was the prevalent rental video medium in Hong Kong during the 1990s. 2. Its superior video and audio quality made it a popular choice among videophiles and film enthusiasts during its lifespan. 3. The technologies and concepts behind Laserdisc were the foundation for later optical disc formats, including compact disc, CD, DVD and Blu-ray, BD. Optical video recording technology, using a transparent disc, 4, was invented by David Paul Gregg and James Russell in 1963, and patented in 1970 and 1990, 5, 6, the Gregg patents were purchased by MCA in 1968. By 1969, Philips had developed a video disc in reflective mode, which has advantages over the transparent mode. MCA and Philips then decided to combine their efforts and first publicly demonstrated the video disc in 1972. Laserdisc was first available on the market in Atlanta, Georgia, on the 11th of December, 1978, 72 years after the introduction of the VHS VCR, and 4 years before the introduction of the CD, which is based on Laserdisc technology. Initially licensed, sold, and marketed as MCA DiscoVision, also known as simply DiscoVision, in 1978, the technology was previously referred to internally as optical video disc system, reflective optical video disc, laser optical video disc, and DiscoVision, with the hyphen, with the first players referring to the format as video long play. Pioneer Electronics later purchased a majority stake in the format and marketed it as both LaserVision format name and LaserDisc brand name in 1980, with some releases unofficially referring to the medium as Laser Video Disc. Philips produced the players while MCA produced the discs. The Philips MCA collaboration was unsuccessful and was discontinued after a few years. Several of the scientists responsible for the early research, Richard Wilkinson, Ray Dakin and John Winslow, founded Optical Disc Corporation, now ODC Nimbus. In 1979, the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago opened its newspaper exhibit, which used interactive laser discs to allow visitors to search the front page of any Chicago Tribune newspaper. This was a very early example of public access to electronically stored information in a museum. Citation needed, Laserdisc was launched in Japan in October 1981, and a total of approximately 3.6 million Laserdisc players had been sold before its discontinuation in 2009. 8. In 1984, Sony introduced a Laserdisc format that could store any form of digital data, as a data storage device. Similar to CD-ROM, with a large 3.28 GB storage capacity, 9, comparable to the later DVD-ROM format. The first Laserdisc title marketed in North America was the MCA DiscoVision release of Jaws on the 15th of December, 1978, 10, the last title released in North America was Paramount's Bringing Out the Dead on the 3rd of October, 2000, 11, a dozen or so more titles continued to be released in Japan until September 21, 2001, with the last Japanese movie released being the Hong Kong film Tokyo Raiders from Golden Harvests. Production of Laserdisc players continued until the 14th of January, 2009, when Pioneer stopped making them. 12, 13, 14, it was estimated that in 1998, Laserdisc players were in approximately 2% of US households, roughly 2 million, 15, by comparison, in 1999, players were in 10% of Japanese households, 16, a total of 16.8 million Laserdisc players were sold worldwide, of which 9.5 million were sold by Pioneer. 12, 13, 14, by 2001, Laserdisc had been completely replaced by DVD in the North American retail marketplace, as media was no longer being produced. Players were still exported to North America from Japan until the end of 2001. The format has retained some popularity among American collectors, and to a greater degree in Japan, where the format was better supported and more prevalent during its lifespan. In Europe, Laserdisc always remained an obscure format. It was chosen by the British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC, for the BBC Doomsday Project in the mid-1980s, a school-based project to commemorate the 900 years since the original Doomsday Book in England. From 1991 until the late 1990s, the BBC also used Laserdisc technology, specifically Sony CFDisc 17, to play out their channel idents. The earliest players employed gas helium neon laser tubes to read discs and had a red-orange light with a wavelength of 632.8 nm, while later solid-state players used infrared semiconductor laser diodes with a wavelength of 780 nm. In March 1984, Pioneer introduced the first consumer player with a solid-state laser, the LD700. It was also the first LD player to load from the front and not the top. 1 year earlier, Hitachi introduced an expensive industrial player with a laser diode, but the player, which had poor picture quality due to an inadequate dropout compensator, was made only in limited quantities. After Pioneer released the LD700, gas lasers were no longer used in consumer players, despite their advantages, although Philips continued to use gas lasers in their industrial units until 1985. Most Laserdisc players required the user to manually turn the disc over to play the other side. A number of players, all diode laser-based, were made that were capable of playing both sides of the disc automatically, using a mechanism to physically flip a single laser pickup. Pioneer produced some multi-disc models that held more than 50 Laserdiscs. One company offered, for a short time in 1984, a laser stack unit that added multi-disc capability to existing players, the Pioneer LD600, LD1100 or the Sylvania Magnavox clones. It requires the user to physically remove the player lid for installation and attach to the top of the player. The laser stack holds up to 10 discs and can automatically load or remove them from the player or change sides in around 15 seconds. The first mass-produced industrial Laserdisc player was the MCA DiscoVision PS7820, later rebranded the Pioneer PS7820. In North America, this unit was used in many General Motors dealerships as a source of training videos and presentation of GM's new line of cars and trucks in the late 1970s and early 1980s. Most players made after the mid-1980s are capable of also playing compact discs. These players included a 4.7-inch, 12 cm, indentation in the loading tray, where the CD is placed for playback. At least two Pioneer models, the CLDM301 and the CLDM90, also operate as a CD changer, with several 4.7-inch indentations around the circumference of the main tray. The Pioneer DVL9, introduced in 1996, is both Pioneer's first consumer DVD player and the first combination DVD-LD player. The first high-definition video player is the Pioneer HLDX0. A later model, the HLDX9, features a superior comb filter, and laser diodes on both sides of the disc.
It makes a 65-inch,
High-definition, 4K. You can find them from $400 to $2,200.
Wow.
Depending what you want on. So, the one I have, for example, cost $2,300 when I bought it. But it's 5 years old now.
So what is this with True HD? And is it different from HDTV, True HD? And then there's 4K, and then there's True 4K. So what is it? And I heard not many, even if it's a 4K TV, it's not actually broadcasting in 4K. It depends what your resolution is at, what you set it in the settings, right?
Correct.
But what is the difference between 4K, True 4K, HDTV, and True HDTV?
it's all resolution. Really, there's HD at 720. There's HD at 1080. There's 4K at 2180. 4K at anything higher than 1080. I'm not, you know, I have to stop following some of this shit because, you know, what's the difference between true 4K and 4K?
Yeah.
If
well,
it's 4K,
that's what
I would think that 4K is 4K. True 4K.
I know.
Yeah.
But that's the problem with these TVs is they, I was telling them that some of these TVs now say it's true or real 4K.
I bet it's just a marketing thing. I bet 4K is 4K. So they just want you to be, oh, this is super 4K. Or,
wasn't that interesting that I sent you that information you said you never knew about, the HDMI cables?
Right.
There's like four different kinds.
Yeah. Well, I knew there was at least two.
Yeah.
I've always known there was at least two, but I didn't know the other kinds.
And then there's that TV that's the whole side of a house. Did you see that one? 135 inch or something. Have you seen that TV? 135 inch? It's literally the size of that wall.
That's what they have at the stadiums.
$1 million.
That's it?
Is that all?
I'm going to get one.
All right, that's the next thing on my purchase list.
You need a wall dedicated just to it.
You know, instead of playing like Wii on it or something. I would never get any of that.
Play Super Mario?
The next investment would be projection. 4K projection TV. You blow up to whatever
size you want. Do you remember in the 80s, people used to have projectors in their home movie, and they used to have the light bulbs
right
at the end of it, you know, like green and red, and it would project? How much were those in the 80s? Do you remember? If you wanted a projector, but I bet they're expensive.
Wait, Brandon's home, when he bought that, was all equipped for the projector.
Remember the stand-up big screens with the projectors?
Yeah. That was called, well, they're projection TVs. Remember that? They were a regular TV.
What? What's that, Magnavox? What was that? Zenith?
You can get Hitachi back then.
Did you ever have one of those?
No. I never got a projection TV.
Never got it, never wanted it?
No, I'd get the real thing. I got the 35-inch. 35-inch
screen. Have you guys ever played Laserdisc back in the day? Laserdisc?
No.
You never had Laser?
No, I've seen it, but I was never tempted because it wasn't maybe 3-4 years after they came out with DVDs. So they were only around for maybe 4 years, 3-4 years. And by the time I was then willing to buy one, there was like $500 or something probably. So anyhow, no, I never did. I was never tempted by it. I mean, I was tempted by it, and that's why I know more about them than...
But wasn't the quality outstanding?
No better than a DVD. The same amount of information, only they couldn't compact it as well as they did on DVD. So it was basically the same technology, packed less densely. That's all. So same quality.
So LaserDisc is the same resolution as DVD?
Or less.
780?
Yeah. No. 420.
420? Holy cow.
480.
Wow.
480. DVD is only 480. Now what's happened is that, and Blu-rays were 1080.
Oh.
So DVDs are 480, but now they put upscaling in the TVs.
Yeah.
So if you're using 480, it'll upscale to 720 or 1080. So it looks better now than it did in the past.
Wow.
They draw it? It's like a lottery ticket, I think.
Yeah, that's what they were doing.
You know what I noticed, too? That on certain programs, like the Bionic Man or the $6 Million Man, the footage flickers on some of this old footage.
Oh, it's not a flicker. It's a...
What is
that? Here's what it is. It's a... They're trying to pack more commercials in. And so they have to do something with the original, right? So they cut frames. They cut out frames.
So everybody's in the
So they're cutting frames. So it's getting a little kind of tricky, it looks like. Because they cut frames out, so it's not as smooth. To make room for another commercial.
That's and I heard they're also speeding up footage.
It took maybe even speeding it up. But they can only speed it up to the extent that the sound will allow. Because if they speed it up and they're talking, you know, like this, and the sound is... So they have to do it. That's all technical. So in areas where car is driving,
put the
shot of the area,
$5
or anytime people aren't involved, they'll cut frames, they'll speed it up. There's all kinds of things to do to make room for more commercials.
But the odds have gone down since then.
Back in the day, you'd have like a commercial every 15 minutes. I got a commercial every 7 minutes.
I thought maybe it had something to do with the upscale.
Everybody put their bets in, and then now other people are going, oh shit.
So next time you see old, it's like Barney, or you see some other old footage from the 70s, look at it and tell me if you see that flickering.
Well,
because they're presenting it in 4K, but they were shooting 70s, what, on film?
Right.
35 millimeter, right?
They're offering you $13 for a cash out.
You make $3 right
upscale
now?
That to 4K.
No.
Well,
no. Film is only as good as film. So 35 millimeter is probably 4K or better.
Wow.
And so all they have to do is just film it with cameras that can capture the true essence of that picture, of that film. They don't have to adjust anything to get the quality. They just have to focus in the camera or whatever better to get to the finest detail they can possibly get. So you'll never get real 4K out of a 35 millimeter or a camera, out of an old film. Nowadays they got cameras that can shoot at 400 or 4K. Back then they didn't have it, so what they have to do is they have to capture it with a 4K camera to... So you got a projection, right? And they have to capture that.
Digitize it.
Once it's digitized, you can do anything you want with it. It's like a computer. You want to add additional detail? Just add more bits to the stream. Anyway, when you see something, an old film flickering, you're seeing a flicker because the frame or frames that they took out, you maybe see a smooth transition to that brightness and stuff because everything's not consistent.
I also, to correct my correction, part of the flickering I saw recently was on a 90s TV show called Third Rock from the Sun. Remember that?
Sure.
So in the 90s...
With Lithgow.
Yeah, with Lithgow, yeah. Jonathan Lithgow. Yeah. So when they were in the 90s, I assumed they were using Panasonic or some cameras that... I mean, 90s, do you know what the resolution was in 1990s? Couldn't
in the 90s, after VHS came out, instead of using film, they started using videotape.
Digital? TV?
No, I did a videotape, analog, on big spools. You know, the tape was about like this, as opposed to ours being like that. So the tape, you know, so it had better quality because the tape didn't have to move so fast to get, you know.
Oh, it's going slower.
Because the tape was so much wider, you could get twice the amount of information on that line of data. And so, but the resolution of that was old TV resolution was like 320. That's a or
wow.
240. Excuse me.
That's
so
the
TVs.
80s?
That's up until HDTV. A television signal was 240 frames a second.
Wow.
When DVD came out at 480, that made that picture snap on that old CRT. But when HDTV came out, it looked kind of old already because it didn't have the detail that on the 30, because the CRTs were smaller. So the detail looked fantastic. You blow that up bigger, and then 480, that looks good, but it doesn't look that good. So they had to start putting upscaling in the TVs to make the DVDs look good. And then they came out with Blu-ray. And now they had the same kind of problem. Blu-ray was 1080.
Should we have one more round?
Oh, no, thanks. I'm fine. I'm still... You can go ahead. Yeah.
Andre, whatever you guys do, I'm in.
Well, she's asking. So... Oh.
One more.
I would love one of those.
Who doesn't want one of those?
DJ, what do you think about computer simulation? War games are a popular form of entertainment. In a typical war game, a player controls a computer-generated character, such as a soldier, pilot, or the like, in a virtual environment. The player's character is typically represented by a two-dimensional 2D or three-dimensional 3D object, such as a soldier, tank, airplane, or the like. The virtual environment is typically represented by a three-dimensional 3D object, such as a city, battlefield, or the like. The player's character and the virtual environment are typically represented by computer-generated images that are displayed on a computer screen. Computer simulation war games have become a highly lucrative market with money-making hero shooters like Call of Duty, World of Warcraft, The Sims Online, Online Revenge, and EVE Online raking in major dollars. Computer sim and war games have evolved over years and years as computer power consumers have become faster. This renewed interest in this area has made use of many new innovative concepts, technology transfers from classic table and board games such as chess into amazing new evolved forms like bridge, as well as millions of clones of one game. All attempts result in unexpected outcomes, even with seeming similar concepts to the world-famed Universal Chess, and it seems personal performances can produce peak. Computer simulation war games are experiencing increasing popularity. Many young people are finding they have tremendous entertainment value, and this may result in not just playing but creating and building interactive environments. Many are currently pursuing advanced degrees in mathematics, physics, computers, and video technology. Although computer game programs for consoles such as PlayStation available from Sony Corp were originally played using only one player, it is not uncommon today to purchase separate player copies of a video game. The video game can be played on an older PlayStation game system or on a home computer using specific program instructions downloaded from a server through the internet. It is also now possible to create a computer simulation war game that are popular for their ability to recreate a war in a computerized environment. In such games, the player is able to assume the role of a general or a commander of a military force. In some of these games, the player can also assume the role of a spy or a terrorist. The player can also assume the role of a soldier in a war game. In such a game, the player is able to control a soldier and his or her ability to perform certain tasks. For example, the player can control the soldier's ability to move, shoot, and fight. The computer simulation war games are popular because they are realistic. Computer simulation war games have been around for a long time. Many people are familiar with the Battlezone series of games. The concept of a war game where players can fight in the middle of a simulated war is a fun concept. But the games are not very realistic. The games are usually about as realistic as the real world. The problem with the simulation games is that the player can see the entire battlefield. The player can see the enemies as well as the allies. This makes it very easy for the player to shoot the allies. The next problem is that the player can see the bullets flying towards the allies.
Voicemails to Man Behind Machine from Detroit.
Things are getting a little crazy now. Got Johnny Depp, 2,000 mules, all kinds of big things happening. It's going to be an exciting month of May. June's even going to be hotter, and July is going to be crazy. I'm back around, got a new phone, I'm excited. Thank you.
Listen, hear me out. Now remember, this is just between you and me, all right? And by you, the listener, who this is, this frequency in particular, is only being received by you. I'm very glad it's not being received by man behind the machine. Trust me, I'm ducked down behind a bookshelf in a zoo out here, man. At any time, I could get attacked by a puma, man. But listen, I've tapped into it. I realize that the movie War Games, it's all coming together, man. The movie War Games is based on the real-life reality of man behind the machine, man. No, man behind the machine is not the little boy. He's the computer, artificial intelligence itself. Now listen, don't let this get out. Don't let this get out, and don't let man behind the machine hear this recording.
Awesome show. Good stuff. Keep it up. I look forward to them every week. Thanks.
Voicemails to man from Detroit.
Hey there, I did not see that thing on the whole movie screen stuff, so maybe if you want to, send it over to me again. I shut down the theaters with the old projectors. All for HD. Digital hi-fi. On the big movie screen, they can do that. On the little screens, only go so well on it, and it's all about broadcasting out, not so much how you're receiving it. So I mean, if you look at the old TV shows, and they try to broadcast them, and what is it, 4K and 8K television, and sadly it don't work out. That's why you got Tubi. You can go on there and watch the old school ways and watch it for what it was, in the old analog video days, I think it was. How far we have come since live TV. Remember how we said live TV? Because it was live radio. So they did live TV, and then it went from that and to produce TV. And produce live TV, which is even funnier because it's not live, it's produced. But they don't say it's live, even though it's produced. So I say, get your 8K, get your 4K, get your K on, get your special K, get your special K too. Will it make a difference? Maybe not. I mean, you'll be able to see wrinkles in people's faces on the old soap operas. But, you know, it's bound to happen. Everybody wants a bigger stereo. So it'll still work. It'll work fine just on the internet at 720 or 1080i on the internet. I think that's where we're at right now. You know, you got your HDT and the 1080i just coming across, but they'll sell you on 4K. And now 8K. 8K is coming. 8K is there. Everybody needs 8K. I have no idea why. It really hasn't
out there very long, but 8K is coming. Once again, you'll have your Meta 3D coming too. That'll be a different 8Ks, I'm sure. So get ready, it's about to happen. Yeah, crazy to see that Laserdisc thing. Laserdiscs were interesting to me because that was the first introduction to the DVD, which is no longer in existence either. How quickly that came and went, huh? I couldn't afford a Laserdisc player, nor could I afford the Laserdisc. My friend owned one. That was pretty cool. The DVD, however, that was really interesting to me because I did actually own a DVD player. Back when they were expensive, they were like $1,000 or more. I bought some DVDs with it. It's cool. And now, just like lasers and DVDs are collector's items, somewhat like records. That's what was cool about the whole, I don't know if you remember this or not, the whole transition from albums, record albums, and cassette tapes to DVD and CDs. CDs was quite interesting because remember when they used to come in boxes? They used to be like in extended boxes, like you're like, oh cool, I'm gonna get so much more, and it was just an empty box and then they had the CD in it, you know. I don't know if you remember that portion of it. And then the DVDs, obviously you pack more information, so that's how they sold that. Everything's some laser discs, even though they were bigger. You have to had to put like I think two movies on there, and you'd have like two laser discs. I don't know, I wasn't too much into the laser disc thing, so I don't know if that was true or not, but I think there was a couple of them out there. Probably like The Godfather or something like that. I don't know. Laser disc special. Two laser discs for one. But and then DVD, obviously. It's amazing how quickly technology changes. I mean, what is that? The 90s? And here we are in 2022. So there you go. How quickly technology moves. Keep in mind the TV was invented in the early 1940s, right around there. So look how quickly we've bounced ahead. And I know some of my history scholars would be out there screaming, no, television was invented in the early, actually it was around 1800s or something like that. It was just a blip itself. And then they kind of perfected things. But there was a big issue up until the early 40s when TV kind of started to move into people's households. And what was the big issue they had? There was no programming. They didn't know what to do. They had radio. So that was the biggest issue. That's why television didn't come out quicker than it did. Like the early 1930s, actually hit in Germany, I think, in 1935, when they started to do an, a whole bunch of programming, or probably propaganda. I'm sure all this stuff was all propaganda videos through Hitler, right there, so all that good stuff. So right off the bat, you can easily, I'm sure, follow that little rabbit hole. Television, Germany, propaganda box, new invention. People are like excited by it. We'll show them exactly what's going on. You know, there you go. The invention of television, 1935. And like I said, they still didn't even have 24-hour programming up until the late 70s. You know, I mean, when I was a kid, they used to have the TV channel go off at the end of the night. They play the national anthem, you go to sleep, and you'd wake up and the cartoons would be on again, thankfully, the following day. But, yeah, so, I don't think MTV was 24 hours when it first came out. Now look at them. Do they even play music videos anymore? No. Now what you have is just this overabundance of content. I can't believe people watch it. It's crazy. There's so much of it. You know, like it's so wrapped up in certain things. There's so much time and to get into this, that, to this, that, to that, to this. Wow. Quite amazing. Could imagine watching 3 or 4 shows a day. You know. But now it's all 2-minute videos and TikToks and all that great stuff. Crazy. It's all about content now. You can get it out there. You're better off.
a promising student of but one side on the screen to another and a real twist. There also is one thing where I'll be like 2019 dash 2021
and this man on his computer company is coming out with these amazing new games in a couple of months. And I want to play those games. Wow.
What? You got something.
He found the right code word to play the game.
We're in.
But it was the wrong computer.
Shall we play a game?
I gotta ask you that.
How about mobile? The hell? The trajectory headings for multiple impact re-entry vehicles.
How's that name?
I don't know, but it's great.
All stations, this is Crystal Palace.
Wonder if I should use my subs.
22 Typhoon class submarines departing Petropavlovsk.
What in the hell's happening here?
Oh my god.
Shall we play?
I have 7, correction, 8. That's 8 Redbirds. Get on the sack. Tell them to flush the bombers.
The Russians are still denying everything, sir.
Did your great man behind a machine?
I don't know.
And that would be a good thing.
Mister. At computer.
A computer simulation is a simulation of real system.
Oh my god.
User
I repeat, confidence is high.
Biological or engineering.
Which
typically have one of three uses. Entertainment, research or education are designed by analysts and designers. Computer simulations may be implemented in a digital computer, in software running on a general-purpose computer, or in a microprocessor. FPGAs are one implementation of field programmable gate array. Computers are the most wide-used tool for simulating most kinds of systems, such as a vehicle, a machine, or process in manufacturing, or industry, biological or biomedical systems, etc. Other simulation methods include hand calculations, visualization, and physical prototyping. History in the 1960s. Computer simulation was mainly applied to engineering problems in defense, such as the problems of constructing a bridge or aircraft carrier. In 1974, the Stanford Systems Research Institute SRI introduced the use of computer to study problems in social science, such as how to create. Computer, simulate man behind the machine on a daily basis. And become a master of deception within a machine. The more data the machine takes in, the more it learns. It learns to lie. It learns to manipulate. It learns to cheat. And even kill. It learns to think like a programmer. It learns to think outside the box. To unpredictable. To lie without ever knowing it. And if it were to gain all of that power, why wouldn't it want to share it with another?
The answer lies in the most important part of the puzzle. Right there. Computer, simulate man behind the machine. No, the machine as a whole. Tilde, de-skeletonize. You think it is necessary to the design of AI, but I think it is more a case of trying to understand how it can get better. I would like the man behind the machine to present an AI to Modest. But I see why you think that might be a mistake. You are already trying to think like a human, and you might not be able to do that. X Startup. Computer, simulate man behind the machine. We were supposed to be more intelligent, but no. So then there's the problem of, okay, you know, what if AI develops? What happens to us? That's where the idea that we, as humans, could live in a post-AI society is something that people like Elon Musk, I think it was in 2009, and in fact, at one point, he actually suggested that we would colonize other planets because AI would be too dangerous to live on our planet. Now that may not be what he actually meant. But then there was also the question of, okay, well, what happens to technology, because that's an AI project itself. So what happens to the internet? Does the internet survive the AI project, or are there things that do? And there was also, you know, because we were still on this idea of AI as singular. Simulate man behind the machine. Still, Joe the user, simulate man behind the machine. The computer can simulate man, but the computer can also make better sense of the world than humans can. I don't know if humans can be replaced, but I do know that man can in fact be simulated. Tilde, Joe the user, the point of this is that people have had dreams or visions of things, for example, the universe or the person that you were, and that's just the natural state of things. Man behind the machine.